This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 69 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens. This week, 69 has released a special report called The Total Guide to Fine Pitch LED. It's a big 60-plus page look at the display technology, coming at it from all kinds of angles. The report came together in part because of sponsors, like the major one, custom LED design firm D3. They not only contributed to the report, but two of their main guys went along with me when I went to Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Shenzhen, China back in November to get a deep look into the companies and technologies. Those guys go over there a lot, and they knew who I should talk to and what I should see. And to their everlasting credit, the tour was in no way just about D3. George Pappas and Jason Barrick just wanted to ensure I got a good look and made the most of my limited time. Shenzhen is vast and it's bewildering, so that help was incredibly valuable. Jason runs the business development client-facing side of D3, and in the wake of the report coming out, I wanted to catch back up with him about what's going on in fine pitch LED, which is a lot. Jason, thank you for joining me. Maybe the first thing is talk about your experience selling direct ULED, fine pitch ULED. There's, you know, so many companies out there selling this stuff, so much jargon, and it's largely new technology to most people. So how do you approach this in terms of new opportunities with clients? What are you trying to explain to them and get their heads around?
Sure. That's a great question, Dave. And thanks for having me on the program today. You know, a lot of it is education. People hear a lot about LED technology, and you know, sometimes it's just kind of getting them over the hump that it's not an LED TV, in a backlit LCD using LED, but it's really getting them their arms around what the technology is. So understanding pixel pitch, understanding brightness, understanding the configurability of the displays. But then it's also looking at what's their ultimate goal. Why do they want to utilize the technology? Not just we need to put a video wall here, but why? So there's it's quite a process. And you know, for us, getting in early to really understand all the client's objectives is hugely helpful in the entire process.
Do they have objectives usually?
Sometimes. But sometimes they need a little assistance. And it really depends on where you get in the process and who you're speaking with, whether you're working with the architect, whether you're working with a building manager, a construction manager, whether you're working with a client direct. And that client direct, is it the CTO? Is it the CMO? Whomever it is. Do you have all those people at the table? Do they already have a design that they'd like you to try and mirror, or are they working with you to help come up with the design? You also have to look at, is it new construction? Is it an existing infrastructure? So all these factors play into guiding the client to a solution that's going to best fit their objectives, or at least a foundation of what they want to do, and then building things up from there. A lot of times in the process, in the education portion of it, is you're showing them examples of other implementations in the past, it really helps get some creative ideas going on their end of the utilization of the technology.
Yeah, I found it really interesting when we did the Asian trip, and we first stopped in Hong Kong, and I tagged along to a client meeting you had, and it was intriguing to have the architects there, but also the HVAC guy, who I'm thinking, why is he here? But you know, you guys brought up the whole business of, you know, where are the where's the air ventilation system? Is there condensation? When is it off and on? All those sorts of things. Like, there's a lot of considerations that really, really aren't obvious at all.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad you pointed that out. You know, and at D3, that's just kind of what we do. We have to look at the project as a whole, not as just an individual screen, because there's so much that goes into that. And that's when, you know, in the education process, when we're talking with clients, you know, the screen is one portion of it, but there's so many other things that affect whether it's the operation of the screen, whether it's additional costs. I mean, I was with a client the other day, and you know, they're saying, well, you know, your display is just a little slightly more than your competitor. But then I started walking them through the peripheral equipment, the processing, the installation, the serviceability, and all of a sudden, you know, his eyes lit up, you know, an enlightening moment that, wow. So you really have to look at, I try and educate clients a lot of times, you have to look at things as a program. And, you know, when you're looking at installation costs, I mean, and that's the problem. Sometimes people will piecemeal things as they're purchasing and not realize, you know, when they're looking at the project as a whole, some of these costs that can come up as is specific to the HVAC. Yeah, displays, you know, generate heat. That heat's got to go somewhere. And when some people are just selling a panel rather than a solution, you get into issues like that. And, you know, people see displays walking around the streets and, you know, sometimes like, well, why does that look bad? And you can see, oh, it's got heat issues, or it's got this, it's got that. I mean, you know, it's just part of the process. And when the heat has nowhere to go, the displays will fail.
Mm-hmm. I gather, and based on my traveling around with you guys, you as an end user customer or an integrator are in deep, deep trouble if all you're thinking about is cost of the panels, cost of the modules.
Oh, without question. And, you know, we've seen it time and time again where, you know, people just focus on price, price, price. You know, and there are some clients that, you know, build it as cheap as they can and they'll replace it. But what we've found over the last several years is as end users become more educated, they're really getting savvy to not only wanting to understand this stuff, but getting ahead of it. And those are the clients that, you know, we enjoy working with. And when you get involved early, as we did with that client that you attended the meeting with over in Hong Kong, the collaboration that goes on and people understanding, you know, if somebody just gets a drawing that says, I need this, you know, why do you need that? Well, once you have the discussion, it makes sense. And then that breeds more discussion. Well, we can make it easier if you can do this. And, you know, that client is a repeat customer, which is great because over the years, they've seen the value that we bring to educate them. I was on multiple calls with them this week on another project up in Harlem. Went up there yesterday, did a nice site visit, and it's just so nice to have people working together rather than trying to solve issues in the field that just weren't planned for because they weren't planned for.
Is that a client ask that you're seeing more and more now that... It's funny, I was just writing a blog post about turnkey services and how QSRs are selected this one company that does everything for them. If you're an LED panel manufacturer and all you do is manufacture and, you know, make your price and your spec sheets available and how many do you want to buy, is that a tough way to go? Do you need to be at least something of a turnkey provider these days?
You know, it definitely helps because let's put a hypothetical example out there. You know, somebody installs a panel and they didn't plan for whether it's protecting it from moisture or it's not dissipating the heat and it fails. Well, if you had, let's say, an integrator or just, you know, let's say a GC that was told to buy these panels and they didn't think about that or didn't know that, they're going to point back at the manufacturer and said, why'd your panel fail? And then you get a lot of finger pointing going on. So being able to have, whether it's a good partner that you're working with that understands this. And so, you know, we're seeing a lot of that in the marketplace where some, you know, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. until there's an issue or it works great until it doesn't work great. And so, you know, whether it's an integrator, whether it's turnkey providers, you're seeing the market learn from mistakes.
Is there a distinction? I know you guys have done outdoor displays, and obviously you do a lot of indoor display. If you are working with a systems integrator who has done, let's say, outdoor LED signboards, that sort of thing, are they equipped to do fine pitch indoor display, or is it just a completely different animal?
They can be. However, you know, the outdoor display products are much more robust, whereas the interior, you know, if you look at just, you know, purely, let's say, per square meter cost, the fine pitch are much more. So if you damage or drop an exterior panel, you know, it's not a good thing. But an interior panel, I mean, you know, these are thousands of dollars. And when you have people that just are used to just popping stuff in on the exterior and it's pretty robust, and then on the interior, I mean, you know, you could damage, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in panels without even thinking about it, by jamming stuff in and just really not understanding the finesse of it. That's where you do have some really solid AV integrators that are used to working with LCDs that understand, you know, you got to be gentle with this stuff. It's going to break. Mm-hmm. They understand the importance of alignment and different things. However, when you get into driving the displays on a processing level, driving an LED is much more different than driving an LCD wall. And, you know, there's evidence of that in the marketplace when you look at how certain displays look compared to others.
And how, in what way do they look different? If I'm an untrained eye, what would you be pointing out?
I'd be pointing out things such as compression artifacts that you might see, pointing out content that is not creative natively for whatever the pixel resolution is. So let's say somebody's content is 1080p. And then they put in a display that's not quite that configuration, and it's either stretched or it's over pixelated, or you know, think of you know, when you go into these hotels and they cheap out, you know, they might have an LCD 16:9 aspect ratio, but then, you know, they're pumping in some crappy content into it. You know, you got black lines on the top and the bottom, and the image is all fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things in my journey of trying to understand LED and how it works, the whole business of resolution and how the resolution of your display is directly correlated to the number of modules you have and the number of LED pixels on each of those modules. So you don't automatically get something that's 1080. You got to build it to that, or to 4K, or whatever it is you're trying to do. And then the scale is very different.
Well, agreed 100%. I mean, you know, some of the panel manufacturers, you know, have worked to get configurations that, you know, when you add out a certain number of panels, you do get, you know, 1920 by 1080, 1280 by 720, you know, but it's not always exact. Mm-hmm. So it's being able to work with the content appropriately. And, you know, you've got a lot of content providers or clients out there that are creating original content for the displays. And so those are the ones that stand out from the crowd. You know, we've all seen many a displays out there that, you know, people are just kind of awe. You know, the Netflix, which we completed early last year, is, you know, one that you guys have covered before, but that's kind of one of those awes where, you know, the client really takes the time creating original content that really excites the viewer.
Yeah. And I think, when we were over there, you talked about how, some creative agencies are really, really happy when they can hear that, they can produce content at a native resolution that's going to play out at a native resolution, and they don't have to develop kind of chunks of content that are going to all stitch together somehow.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, a lot of panel manufacturers might have limitations, you know, as they're driving the display to maybe, you know, 1920 by 1080 pipes. And do they stitch that stuff together? How are they processing it? Whereas if you can, you know, give a content creator basically a blank canvas that they can go crazy, and there's no limitations on file sizes, there's no compression, you know, it does make it easier for them. Because you think of it this way, most, well, let's take retail for an example. When retailers are shooting their catalogs doing different things, you know, the same camera they're using for their stills, they're using for their videos these days. Mm-hmm. And they're shooting, you know, everything in as high resolution as possible. So, you know, again, going back to that project in Hong Kong, we created a template for the client, and we had a conference call with their content creator. And when we told them, just go wild, guys, you know, no limitations, they're like, oh man, this is great. Because they're typically having to down-res stuff to put on, let's say, a traditional LCD video wall. So as you see more and more of these larger megapixel displays, you're going to see kind of a race as far as who's being able to process it and generate content better.
Right. Who's really adopting this technology right now? I certainly see corporate in office tower lobbies and things like that, but those are kind of specialty projects, onesie twosies. And I've seen many instances in flagship retail, but I'm starting to see more and more pretty ambitious LED display walls in like drugstores and retail that I would not kind of think of in terms of big wow sizzle flagship kind of places.
Sure. No, 100%. You know, for what I've seen in the market in my 20 years, the last five have really embraced the fine pitch. And a lot of it's because it's become cost effective. You know, and I think the first adopter really was broadcast. You know, as plasma was phased out, LED really became a good go-to to have walls that had zero seams that were configurable. So the ESPNs, the Major League Baseball networks, you see the election coverage. So a lot of the, you know, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, you see these huge walls that are replacing previous LCD walls. And what's been interesting about that is a lot of retail has taken cues from broadcast. And you think, why did broadcast do a lot of this stuff? I mean, you think of the weathermen on TV and they're looking at that green screen. Well, now you can actually, they can truly interact with the display there because they can put that content on there. And so it becomes a virtual canvas in the studio that they can change. Project we did with Major League Baseball, I mean, what they're doing, I mean, the designer of the set did an amazing job putting in mullions and plexiglass over LED in a kind of a faux archway, and it looks like a breezeway into the stadium. Right. It just, and you know, on camera, it looks stunning, absolutely amazing. So what you're seeing with retail now is picture maybe a small store. We're working with the client, and they said, how do we open this up without mirrors? Well, they were able to put virtual windows on the wall that spoke to their brand, told the story of who they are as a company, why their product is differentiated, plus gave that experience of walking into the store and being able to look out these virtual windows. Mm-hmm.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to you browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
One of the challenges that I've seen with the fine pitch LED is simply that the packages, the little light packages, are fragile, and you really, really don't want the general public or people who work in that environment or whatever to touch them. How do you educate your clients that they need to worry about that, and what do they do? How do you mitigate the risk?
Yeah, that's a definite challenge. I had a client send me some photos a couple weeks ago and, you know, showing some damage in a retail environment, but then I saw that, you know, it was their own people creating the damage. Just by, you know, as they're restocking things, you know, having carts, different things, they're just pushed up against it. And so, you know, a lot of it is education, but, you know, in some retail environments, you know, somebody's going to spill a Slurpee on the screen if they get too close. I mean, kids, you know, it's like, oh, let's go up and touch it. You know, can we prick this off with a key? And that stuff is going to happen. So we've developed some things to help educate a lot of the retail clients to avoid that. And in some situations, for instance, we did a ATM vestibule for a bank, and we actually put plexiglass on stuff that went up to about 8 feet and haven't had any issues there. You're seeing a trend now with LED manufacturers to have almost a coating on the front there, but then that poses some challenges as far as servicing. So, you know, the industry as a whole is working to combat that. And I think everybody working together, it's never going to solve it 100%, but reducing the risk is what everybody wants to do. I mean, you know, in some instances, maybe putting a, you know, something that's aesthetic, but keeps people from getting right up to the screen, you know, whether it's a small glass rail, whatever it might be.
It struck me that the finer the pitch of these modules, which obviously costs a lot more money, but the chips themselves are so small that they seem less at risk just because they're tiny, and it almost seems like very coarse sandpaper as opposed to the larger, higher pitched displays that where you could actually, you know, flick an individual module off.
Yes, but I'll think of it this way. If you have, you know, somebody that rubs up against something or a shopping cart, whatever it is, it's going to tear off, or we've seen stuff sheared off many more pixels on a finer pitch than it will on another one. So, you know, it's a good point, but what we've seen is that sometimes it can really hurt.
Yeah. And you can repair on site though, right?
Yeah. Some people, I know that we specifically have the ability to go on site in a lot of our retail locations and actually repair a diode right on the wall. There's few companies that I know that do that. I mean, a handful, if that, that can do that type of work.
So what you're most encouraging is to have setups that make serviceability pretty easy and that to have spare modules. So if there is damage, you can just swap it out, pop a new one in, and off you go and get the damaged one repaired and put that into the spare pool.
Yeah, but that talks back into, you know, having somebody that's trained to be able to remove that panel,
right,
and replace it. And in a lot of retail locations, you've got constraints of some of them you can't service it during the hours that the retailer's open. So you've got off-hour support. But that said, it's a lot easier to replace an LED panel than it is to pull a full LCD off the wall if there's an issue.
Right.
So, you know, it's a lot of it is about, you know, this kind of goes back to our earlier part of our discussion about educating the client, understanding serviceability, understanding a lot of these things moving forward. And we've been brought in certain situations to kind of rescue something that wasn't integrated properly or set up for service or other things, and clients kind of holding the bag. Well, nobody told us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, education, understanding is critical.
Are there vertical markets or particular types of projects that have emerged that have surprised you guys that you didn't really see this tech going in there?
Yeah, recently an architect who does residential. Yeah. And, you know, as the displays become more cost effective, you know, people have money to spend. And, you know, you're going to start seeing LED in residential more and more. I know that, you know, at CES, there were some things that surprised people, but that's interesting. You know, we've seen requests over the years. I mean, a couple of years ago, we actually put a display on a funnel cake trailer for amusement parks and fairs. Mm-hmm. And it was very custom. And, you know, with what the cost was, we were shocked that they did it. But then the owner told us how much he makes at these places, and we were blown away. And it was
why the hell am I in the LED business? I should be selling funnel cakes.
Exactly. And it's just, you know, every day, you know, we see things, and, you know, you're starting to see a lot of LED integrated in areas that you typically wouldn't think, you know, as you were saying. So, you know, we're seeing that more and more. I mean, as you were saying earlier, you know, drugstores, convenience stores. And what it is a lot of people don't realize or think about it. I mean, you know, people are like, well, it takes up energy, this and that. But when you look at the carbon footprint of, let's say, a banner or something, you know, thinking about printing it, shipping it, labor to put it up, take it down, put it up, take it down, print it, and get rid of it. You know, LED is becoming a more and more attractive visualization technology for people to implement to communicate on an instant basis, literally.
Mm, yeah. My big moment was on the way back from this trip and spending some time in Hong Kong, just wandering around and seeing LED everywhere, and like fine pitch LED on a pretty significant scale on the sides of buildings, on top of restaurants, on side streets that were way the hell away from the major shopping districts or anything. So it was just ubiquitous, and it really made me think that, okay, what's happening here is going to happen pretty much everywhere.
No, I agree. And, you know, when I got into this business 20 plus years ago, I thought I was in its infancy. And what I realize more so today is maybe it's a toddler right now. Yeah. I mean, things are really exploding. But to me, what's most fascinating is, you know, you talk about the ubiquity of what you saw in Hong Kong. I look at Times Square, which, you know, I've worked in for the last 17 years, and it's kind of become a little bit of a cluttered mess. Mm-hmm. So what I'm excited about, though, is the creativity, the campaigns, the utilization, the experiential aspects of what LED is doing. And, you know, there are definitely some folks out there that are doing it right, and others that are just kind of, all right, it's replacing LCD wall, same contents going up there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you guys did in Netflix and what I've seen in some of the corporate lobbies for major corporations, that's the stuff that really gets me excited, because, you know, that there's a lot of thought going into that and a lot of serious investment into the content, as opposed to, like you say, you know, we put up an even bigger, brighter billboard in Times Square, and I look at that and go, well, that's nice.
So what?
Yeah.
Yeah, and to me, kind of the next level that we're working on right now is really a cross-platform integration. So when you're tying in other technologies, whether it's on the experiential end, we just did a project recently at Smithsonian where you had an interactive table where people could actually take content from the Smithsonian channel and kind of put it almost into a little bucket, then throw it up onto the screen. So the combination of these technologies, then the integration of sound, the integration of motion, and then, you know, the AR possibilities. So it's pretty amazing where we're going with this, but the utilization of integrating other technologies is really what takes this to the next level.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned a few times cost effective, and I would think for most end users, particularly when they first come across this technology, they're probably not thinking it's very cost effective. They're probably on the edge of having a heart attack if they're interested in the particularly fine pitch stuff. How do you define cost effective?
So we look at a couple key factors. You know, you look at longevity, you look at serviceability, you look at, you know, overall cost of ownership. And I think that is, you know, clients, you know, are calling us saying, well, we've got this LCD wall and, you know, somebody bumped one panel. If we replace it now, I don't think we're going to be able to calibrate it quite, or do they even make that panel anymore? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, LCDs, you know, their lifespan is less, significantly less than traditional, you know, fine pitch LED. The serviceability, a lot of times, you know, I looked at some drawings the other day, and, you know, with the mounts, you were about 7 inches out on this one LCD wall application, where, you know, with LED, you could be half of that. So, and you look at construction costs as well. So again, going back to that project in Hong Kong, you know, when you look at the infrastructure they would put in for the LCD wall, the LED wall was about half. Hmm. And again, there's ways to get creative, but it's, you know, going back to, again, the early part of the discussion, a lot of it is education, because they typically don't realize that. And once they do, they kind of get it. And also they look at the look. I mean, LCDs have kind of become, I wouldn't say passe, but you're sensitized to them. Mm-hmm. You're acclimated to seeing them. So they really don't garner that much attention, but LEDs got that vibrance. There's no seams. The imagery just looks, you know, it's surreal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got retailers putting them at the back of stores just to draw attention and pull people in. And also, I think the configurability of LED versus LCD. And then the other thing, too, is, you know, everybody knew that there was going to be this inflection point where the resolution of LED was close enough to what they'd get with the LCD walls, and the price point was within a reasonable range. And I think we've pretty much gotten there.
Hmm. Is the technology that's out there now, the surface mounted diode stuff, is that interim technology, or are we within, you know, 4 or 5 years going to be seeing things like chip on board and micro LED, other tech that maybe is done in a different way?
Absolutely. It will still be LED based, but, you know, you've got manufacturers already coming out with some of that stuff. And when you go to these shows, you'll see they might have one panel, mm-hmm. or, you know, they're prototyping this or that. I mean, if I go back, you know, 5 years, 4 millimeter, wow, that was pretty good at that time. And, you know, if you saw 2.5, and then, you know, people are starting to, you know, put 1.9 prototypes, you know, now we're there. So I think you'll definitely continue to see an evolution as people want to see these at closer distances, and they want to be able to configure them in ways that you can't with an LCD. And I think the cost, just like when we were paying, you know, $10,000 for plasmas 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, now 60-inch LCD you can get for under $1,000.
Mm-hmm. So when you have cost per square meter for the finest pitch LED product being like $40,000 a square meter, that has to change, and that will change through manufacturing processes and new kinds of technology, where it'll come down to the sort of thing where it can be ubiquitous, I assume.
Yeah, I believe so. It's going to take some time, and at a certain point, you know, you just can't get any lower either. Mm-hmm. So it's in a lot of it too is based on viewing distance. So, you know, we've done a lot of exercises with clients where we've essentially taken the same footprint with a couple different resolutions and then walked them back, you know, 10 feet, 20 feet, 50 feet. And, you know, at certain distances, really it becomes negligible. So it's a lot of times it's an exercise. And, you know, what's going to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular technology, or what are you waiting for? What's that thing that you're hoping will come and will make your selling life easier?
You know, the selling portion is always going to be kind of a journey. And you know, to me, it's the technology is one thing, but the technology shouldn't lead. Mm-hmm. It's really about the solution. It's about, you know, kind of the why, and then working backwards and finding the right technology that's really going to fit the application. And so, you know, as far as the technology, you know, kind of really not necessarily leading, but what we're waiting for, what we're excited about, I think some of the things that you said, whether it's, you know, the chip on board, the micro LED, and, you know, OLED, a lot of people are, you know, thinking that, you know, years from now, we're going to have this OLED type wallpaper in our homes and just kind of change the color of the walls, change the wallpaper, do different types of things. But right now, I mean, what I've seen, I'm pretty happy with as far as the progression goes and also the adaptation of the technology in the market. So to me, it's, you know, the LED technology is one thing, but what I'm excited about is the technology that's going to help drive it, that's going to help the utilization and make it more exciting. So, you know, it's almost like, think of it this way. You could have the greatest TV. Let's look at the content. Let's look how you're using it. What type of information are you putting up there? So to me, I'm more excited about the technology that's going to help enhance the displays. I mean, the displays at the end of the day, they're a vehicle. Mm-hmm. They're a vehicle for whatever you want it to be. And, you know, so look at the gas you're putting in the engine, looking at how you're driving it. That's really, to me, what I'm excited about is I see different clients out there. I see different folks that are just really driving the experience of the display technology.
Jason, thank you. Very good chat. And thanks to D3 for sponsoring the report. It was incredibly important and helpful to have you guys show me around Shenzhen and make sure I didn't get lost.
Oh, no, it was a lot of fun, and we really enjoyed it as well, Dave. Thanks for your time today, and excited to see the report.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.